I'm trying to get harder and tougher mentally and physically every day of my life.
You're either the growth mindset or you're the fixed mindset.
If you're trying to be the best, you need to look at who the best is and see what they do.
Relentless pursuit of progress. There's a difference between the best
and the rest.
And the rest.
Welcome to the Michael Kaz Podcast.
Champions are built in the mind first.
Where we interview scientists, world champions, doctors, and experts in just about every area of health and fitness.
What do you care enough about? What are you fascinated enough about to go so deep and learn so much that you'll know more about it than anyone else?
And now, here's your host, Michael Kazu.
Hello and welcome back. Today I'm interviewing Lucas Parker. Lucas is a multiple-time CrossFit Games athlete and known as the lumberjack of fitness. I got to meet this guy several years ago. Dee and I were on a long RV road trip and we visited him and his girlfriend Lindsay out there and we had a blast, had a great conversation. And so first and foremost, it was just really great to catch up with him. He's such an interesting human being, super quirky, and a really deep thinker. So I enjoyed getting to sit down with him. We start out talking about a plant medicine ceremony that he had over the summer. Yes, drugs, good drugs, and the impact that it's had on his life. And I really want to acknowledge his courage in sharing that. I know it's not an easy thing to share publicly, but I think that it's a really impactful conversation that we had. We talk about the movie The Social Dilemma and both of our thoughts on social media. We talk about the mission that he feels he's on in his career, some of the highlights and also the most challenging stories or moments in his career so far. We get his thoughts on the format of the games this year, why, and this is one of my favorite parts. We talk for a little bit about why we both think Tia and Matt are so dominant, why no one seems able to catch them. And in general, this was just a super fun conversation that I really hope you will love. So without further ado, please help me welcome Lucas Parker.
Lucas Parker, what's up, brother?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Good to see you again.
Likewise, man. Yeah, it's great to be back with you again, man. Tell me what you've been up to this summer.
This summer, been doing some drugs, been doing some self-exploration, been doing a lot of just couch surfing, to be honest, just sort of watching the evolution of, you know, our CrossFit sport and I guess the world at this point. So it's been interesting.
Man, we have a great title already. Lucas Parker on drugs.
Maybe clarify that. I've been reading and learning as well, or maybe only. I'm not sure what the legal implications of this are. You can cut that out if there's anything that incriminates me, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll let you take that risk yourself. I don't think there is. So let's double click on that, man. What do you mean by drugs? I know some people call it medicine. Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, definitely. I like plant medicine, just cactus juice. Basically put some cactus in a pot, boil it for a couple of days, I think, and drink it. It was part of a ceremony done by with the Blackfeet teaching and an elder. So that was really cool. So yeah, teachings of the Blackfeet tribe were a big part of the weekend, the experience. So it wasn't just about, you know, getting high or whatever. And I'm not sure where to begin. I mean, it was kind of, I guess, life-changing in some ways. In some ways, not. Like, I didn't really expect to become, you know, a different person or achieve enlightenment or anything like that. It was kind of just like, well, I just want to be open to this new experience. I've typically been, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm a pretty chill guy, but I'm also pretty like straight laced, kind of just like vanilla white dude that doesn't really explore those kind of extremes of experience. I mean, I guess I explore extreme physical, like biomechanical experiences, but not necessarily psychoactive experiences. So it was cool.
Why did you seek them out? Or why did you seek that out?
I didn't really. It was sort of an interesting opportunity that kind of came up, like, I don't know what the word is, serendipitously. So I've been living in Toronto, and this was earlier in the summer. I just feel kind of blah, you know, the world's falling apart. The sporting world is crumbling and collapsing. So I'm just kind of like, what's going on here? And so I thought I might go home where I grew up to the West Coast, Vancouver Island, West Coast of Canada, for a little visit. But I had a lot of uncertainty around that with, oh, is it smart to get on an airplane? I have, you know, at this point, like elderly parents, am I going to kill them? Cause I'm feeling glum and want to like see my family or whatever. And it's a lot of sort of internal struggle about like, oh, is this selfish? Would this be good for me? Bad for me? A spot opened up. I was informed by, my mom who, has been learning about some of this plant medicine stuff as well. And a spot opened up in a retreat, and it was the weekend of my birthday. So I was like, oh man, this is kind of like a lot of, I don't know if this is dumb to like, you know, look for signs from the universe, but a lot of sort of signs of like, okay, well, I feel like I'm kind of being pushed in this direction. So let's just not fight it. Let's just go with it and see how it goes.
So from my perspective, you definitely have some risk-taking elements, like training so fucking hard for years for a fringe sport or some of the crazy physical things that you do. But to use your own words, you consider yourself kind of a straight-laced guy. How do you marry the two? Like some traditionally for the past 60, 70 years, we've thought of these substances, we being like the government has told us that these substances are as bad as things like heroin or methamphetamine. The world is changing really quickly in relation to that. But how did you marry the two? Like you seem like a super responsible guy. How did it sit with you to do this experience?
Partly the fact that I have, you know, an elderly member of my family who's been learning about it and has had no issues. So there was, it's like, well, okay, I'm, you know, a young, healthy, muscular, you know, fit male. I can probably handle like most substances for a brief short amount of time.
I like the muscular, like the stronger you are, the better off you are.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently for example, maybe THC is like metabolized in your fat tissues or stored there or something. Mm-hmm. And I have like no body fat. So the first time that I tried marijuana, cannabis with THC in it, I must have done two or three like full bong hits, a couple hits off a joint, some number of edibles, and I felt
the first time.
Yeah. I had no effect.
So the first time, I think that can be typical. Like really? you don't feel anything, but after that, that's like a heroic dose of marijuana.
Right. So I was smart about it. I waited, you know, I waited like this was done over the course of many hours, right? To like see if stuff would build or hit me all of a sudden, and it didn't. So I sort of had this now invincibility complex of like, oh, I can do anything and nothing will happen, which probably not smart, but I sort of got off track there. I forget your original question, but some about marrying, like how do I marry being straight laced with trying stuff? And some of it to the point is now, I guess to answer your question is like, I don't know if I'm like a nihilist now, but it's like, well, I mean, if the world is going to end, like, why not just do it and see how it is? Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, that substance along with things like mushrooms or ayahuasca, a number of plant medicines were grossly miscategorized when the war on drugs started in the States. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we could go down a pretty big rabbit hole of like, let's look at the things that are legal, right? Tobacco's legal, incredibly addictive. You know, cigarettes obviously kill you pretty obviously. Alcohol, pretty addictive, not very good for you. And then you look at the ones that are not legal, and they're typically less, of course, there's some big exceptions, right? But some of these plant medicines are not addictive as far as we know. And they have actually they're being sort of researched in some cases, sort of on the down low, being researched in terms of really being effective at fighting addiction, really being effective at fixing PTSD, almost in like a single digit number of sessions. Mm-hmm. And it is pretty heartbreaking to be like, what's the resistance against this? And part of it is just not knowing. I mean, it simply hasn't been researched. And of course, you know, these rules and regulations and legalization kind of has to be backed by research. So I guess I can understand that. But then it's also like, well, perhaps we're living, you know, under a regime or just a particular Western culture or world culture at this point, which seeks to sort of like stifle human spirit and keep people sort of just beat down and use us as batteries in a big machine. Mm-hmm.
So I know it can be really hard to describe these experiences without sounding incredibly woo-woo.
But yeah.
Sort of what did you get out of the experience that you're taking into your life now and you're integrating into your life?
So I'll try and keep it as straightforward as I can, because like you said, it's hard to sort of put that into words. But so this particular medicine had, I guess, a spirit animal. The spirit animal of this medicine was the hummingbird. And sometimes apparently as part of these ceremonies or just sessions you would do on your own, you look to the animal medicine cards, right? There's a number of, you know, different animal medicines and that these cultures use. And so you sort of sit there and you pick a card and you see what it is. And you maybe use that as a little bit of like a prompt or a cue to like guide you through your experience. And the card that I picked was the hummingbird. So I was like, huh. And I kind of felt like maybe like if you're going to do CrossFit L1 or no, maybe you're taking, you're going to your first CrossFit class, like you're doing your intro class at the gym. And then you find out that your instructor is like on the L1 seminar staff. And you're like, oh, okay. Now I feel like I'm in the right place. I have some guidance. Like this is probably going to go okay. Like I'm new to this, but it's all good. So that's kind of how I felt there. And reading through the animal medicine book, that one line in particular stuck out, reading about the hummingbird, which was that, to paraphrase, hummingbird's mission is to spread joy or be destroyed. Yeah. I mean, that was like, that was one of the more like significant kind of powerful things I read in a long time. It was just one line. It sort of made me think like looking at, you know, my life and what I do, like, you know, what is my mission? Like if it's not to spread joy and increase, you know, my joy and of course other people's joy through whatever it is, maybe that's performing as an athlete. Maybe that's helping them improve their lives through coaching. Maybe that's just being, you know, a source of love and care and fun and enjoyment for my friends and family. Like if that's not kind of the main goal or like the main thing, then like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, man.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
There's a, you know, I've done quite a bit of this work myself, and there's a big difference in my opinion in like reading a quote, I don't know, just reading a random quote on social media or having an insight, like reading that quote that you did under the influence of that substance and then having an insight about how that relates to your life and just feeling that in your body, just feeling like a knowing that that is so true for you in your life. So what is that? What have you done with that since then? Like, how does that change who you are and how you go about life?
Well, I can't say I've made any sweeping changes in terms of like, I don't know, my day to day, like, I haven't cast everything aside and become a shaman or whatever, but,
you're qualified now, man. You've done it once. You're qualified.
That's right. I mean, I guess I look the part already.
You did the weekend seminar.
Exactly. Yeah. I got my L1. I think maybe to answer your question, I'm more in like still a reflective phase. I mean, I don't feel, you know, learned or enlightened at all. I think I'm still just trying to learn, trying to think, trying to just watch the world, see what's happening and how I feel about it and what I want to do with my time here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome, man. Thanks for sharing that. So I just watched The Social Dilemma last night.
Oh yeah.
At least a dozen people have talked to me about it because they kind of know my stance on social media and how I've been pretty largely off of it the last several years. You seem like someone that really protects his attention and his consciousness. You seem like very intentional about the way that you live your life. And at the same time, you seem to be relatively active on social media. So I'm curious, A, what your thoughts are or were on the video, if you've seen it, and then B, how, like what your relationship with social media is like.
Man, interesting. I mean, first off, that's very flattering. I appreciate that assessment of how I guess come across or carry myself. I think that sounds amazing. I don't know. I don't know if I am that way, but, and so the movie you mentioned, The Social Dilemma, my partner Lindsay and I did just actually watch that maybe a week or so ago. So that's, good timing in terms of chatting about it. And she would maybe not agree with you in that she probably thinks I do get distracted too much and spend too much time on social media. Mm-hmm. But I think she's more like in your camp, which is like take big vacations. Like she'll post like once a year and just kind of like check it a couple minutes a day kind of thing. So yeah, but I see it as, well, For me, it's part like career based, I guess, because for lack of, I hate the word influencer. I call myself a fitness web celebrity, right? Like there's some people on the internet who know who I am and they think it's cool that I do workout stuff. And I'd love for that to be my thing. That's cool. That's a great honor. If that's my thing, then that's fine with me. And so there's a bit of that aspect to it. Another sort of maybe the other half, is like, it's a creative outlet for me. So, and to be honest, like CrossFit can be pretty boring, right? Like there's only, so like my education ended up being fitness based. So I went to University of Victoria. I started out doing like humanities, a bunch of general stuff, like some sciences, psychology, some philosophy, some film studies, some English literature, a bunch of stuff. And then after a couple of years, I was starting to like get pretty serious about CrossFit. So I was like, let's just switch my education and do a kinesiology or like sports science program. And so that was a very nice, like, you know, a coordination of my education and my sport and outside activities. But it was also kind of like all the eggs in one basket. And when all you're doing and learning and practicing and thinking about day in and day out is, you know, your snatch technique and like percentage volume increases from week to week. And then like reading about the Krebs cycle.
Old Krebs cycle.
It's
good light reading.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's, it can be pretty boring for lack of a better word. And I don't know, not to like cast shade, but being around other people that are also only doing that is also kind of like boring and soul crushing. So yeah, I mean, thanks for checking in on my social media, and maybe you and the viewers at home have seen that, like, you know, I've tried to post some like creative pictures and cool like edits of things and like just crazy, like fun physical displays that aren't just another video of a CrossFitter doing like burpees and thrusters. Cause when I log on Instagram, I don't really want to watch that stuff. So I don't know if that's means I'm like not a fully committed athlete, but I think that's kind of where I'm at with that stuff. And then, so that was kind of, I guess, kind of a 50-50 balance of like, well, business, career related, creative outlet. And then as I talked about a moment ago, like more recently, it is kind of a way for me to spread joy. Like I have 150,000 followers on there. And if I can put out something that like, as someone's just like scrolling through their phone, if I can make them crack a smile or take a pause and you know, stop frowning or thinking about how crappy the world is, then I get, you know, a lot of fulfillment from that too.
I mean, I laughed pretty hard when I saw you doing cleaning jerks on a paddleboard. You do some ridiculous shit, man. It's amazing.
Thanks, man. It's a lot of fun. And you got to stay tuned. I don't know when I'll post it, but that was definitely like take two. And there was an earlier take that didn't go so well. I almost died. So
awesome. Yeah. Awesome, man. For those of you that are interested in the movie that we're talking about, in my opinion, this is like the most important film that you could watch in the past 10 years. It is so timely and it is so like personally connected to just about every single person listening. So check it out, The Social Dilemma. Moving on, man. It's been a while since you've been to the games, and it doesn't seem like you have lost any bit of your passion for the sport. So what goes through my mind is like, what keeps this man going? What is your drive to just continue working so hard when, you know, so many people probably would have given up?
Well, I mean, lately I honestly haven't been working that hard. when I think about that in terms of like, you know, people ask me all the time, people stop me on the street and say, "Hey, Lucas, what's your motivation?" Right. Like, and it changes, man. Like if last time we talked was, I don't know how many years ago, at least five.
Yep. Ish.
And, you know, my motivation then was probably different than it is now. And 5 years before, or, you know, 5 months ago, it might've been different. And I think where I'm at now is like, I just want to do like cool stuff. I want to have fun, you know, use the body and the youth and the health and the vitality that I have to just do cool shit, have a good time, perform, whether that's, you know, on a leaderboard or like just like exploring, you know, what I can do. And of course, like CrossFit in general, or like the CrossFit games, or like the fitness kind of competition niche area, still to me kind of seems like the place to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's maybe, I don't know, I've kind of always said this, like in the back of my mind, there's maybe a point at which I might, I don't know, switch sports, maybe go try like bobsled or Olympic weightlifting or whatever. But because I'm like my, you know, my athletic essence is definitely more like speed and power and explosiveness and skill and things like that. But I mean, for now, like, yeah. So there are definitely moments where I ask the same question, like, oh, why, you know, why haven't I quit? Why am I still training or doing this stuff? And then there'll be a, just a little thing that kind of like creeps in or like pricks me on the shoulder, like, the past CrossFit Open, which I guess was about a year ago to get ready for the 2020 season. I had my best single workout performance ever. I think I took a third place in the world on a workout.
Wow.
I think I was top three or four on the, it was the deadlift, handstand, walk workout, or handstand push. And then, you know, the weight goes up anyways. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm still like literally in the top three or whatever for a given workout. Like I could still probably be pretty good at sport. So that kind of like things like that will kind of keep you in it.
Got it, man. It's like just beyond cliche to use this concept anymore, but it just, what comes through is that you just love training so much. It's just so fun for you. Like the process is so fun that the outcome, sure, that would be nice. And that's part of why you train so hard, or not so hard right now. But you know, I think anytime we can really fall in love with what we're doing day to day and let go of, what the final outcome is, we've already won, right? We have already won in the game of life. Maybe we won't be materially successful as we would hope, but we've already won at the game of life because the majority of our lives is that process, is the day in and day out.
Yeah, that's right. And I would like to say that I'm 100% on board with that, but if, I mean, even just hearing you say that, it was like a nice reminder to me. So, it's definitely, yeah, I don't know. These conversations are tough because I think we're both like, you're sort of trying to like pinpoint the, I don't know, like the ideal or like the, you know, the pinnacle or, to sort of pull out like what, you know, what the good is from what I am capable of. But of course my day to day is not always the best of what I have to offer. Right. Like, so yeah, it's good to have those reminders.
And it's refreshing to hear that you go through hard days too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that, man. So before we started, we were talking about kind of like what your intention was out of this call, out of this interview. And one of the things you talked about is like right now, you don't feel like you have a super focused mission. And I'm curious how you go about like, or what your thoughts are on like finding your purpose in life or your why. Have you grappled with that question or that thing in life? And if so, what are your thoughts and how does one find it?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely grappled. And I, of course, this is going to come off sounding super, I don't know, ignorant or like coming from a place of privilege. But for me, you know, 2020 has been a big eye opener in terms of, oh, like, there's a lot of people, not often the other side of the world, not often third world countries, but a lot of people in my own country of Canada. And of course, in, you know, my, place I often, you know, travel and work and have family in the United States. There's a lot of people that have pretty pressing concerns, whose lives are literally on the line. And that's been the case for a long time, but you know, of course it's at the forefront of our minds now in 2020. And that was before any of this pandemic stuff was ever really going to be an issue. So that has sort of, I guess my thought process these days is like, well, let's go worst case scenario. You know, the aliens are coming, the virus is going to upgrade. It's going to be both a sci-fi alien invasion and like a zombie apocalypse. And then I'm probably going to die because I'm a lover, not a fighter. And then when I'm sitting there like waiting to get into heaven and I'm looking back on my life, it's like, did I really just do like burpees and thrusters the whole time? Like, was that what it was all about? I'm not sure. So trying to, I guess, like being an athlete is an amazing thing. I love being an athlete. I'd like to continue being an athlete, but I don't think that's all there is to it. So I guess I'm more conscious now of like checking myself and being like, okay, well, yeah. Like how is this bringing me joy? How is this bringing other people joy? How is this helping the world? What is this contributing to? Am I taking up, you know, space and resources from someone else who needs it? I don't really know how to assess that, but that's just kind of like, I feel the thought processes that I have to kind of have to just, you know, reflect and find some either peace or certainty in the uncertainty or I don't know what, with just, with what I'm doing with my life.
Yeah, man, that really resonates with me and my experience. Something I learned from my dad is that it doesn't matter as much what you do in your career or what you're doing outwardly as much as who you are doing what you're doing and how you are being. You know, I talked to him years ago about like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And he, you know, he's been a politician and an attorney. And he said at some point in his life, he discovered that, you know, what he did in his career didn't matter nearly as much as who he was for his family and his immediate community. And that that brought him and has always brought him the most amount of fulfillment. And to me, that did then and does now relieve me of so much pressure to like go out and quote unquote make an impact, right? Sure, that would be cool for my ego, but what is attainable to all of us right now is just bringing the joy and being a light for people when they're going through darkness and a bunch of other woo-woo shit. But it's very attainable, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you put that really well. And as you were talking, I felt my shoulders kind of drop and relax. So that was nice.
Hell yeah, man. So I'd love to hear some stories from your career. What is one of the top three or five peak moments in your CrossFit career so far?
Interesting. All right. Well, one that I've referenced a lot, but still holds true, is the 2013 clean and jerk ladder at the CrossFit Games. And I came first place in that event, but I actually tied for first place with a young man named Asia Barto, who is for OG, you know, CrossFit fans, you'll of course know who he is.
Tallest guy in CrossFit history.
And super nice guy as well. A couple funny stories about Asia. So the first time I was at the CrossFit Games, 2011. And I think this was in the, so we were getting our walkthrough of the venue, right? So getting our briefing and we were in the locker room and guys were taking a break and going pee and we're in the bathroom and stuff. And so Jason Kalipa and Asia Barto and a few other guys are in there and Asia's a rookie at the games. I'm a rookie at the games. And so I'm a little more reserved, but Asia sort of is, you know, trying to, I don't know, say hi to guys and stuff. And so he goes up to Jason Kalipa and he says, what's up, man? Asia, and shakes his hand. And Jason goes, oh, hey, Northern California.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that was a super funny moment. I'm glad I got to sort of be a fly on the wall for that. It was just pretty perfect. So then in 2012, Asia and I, we had a bit of a head scratcher after the strength event, which was a clean ladder. It was just a clean ladder. So you just had to take the bar from the floor of your shoulders. Wasn't even mandated that you squat. So a lot of guys, like I think Dan Bailey did like a muscle clean with like, you know, 750 pounds or whatever. and so Asia and I got to the end. And we both came like middle of the pack, right? We were in the, I don't know, in the mid to high teens, I think, if I recall. And we both kind of were like, hey, like, aren't we kind of like some of the Olympic liftery guys? Like, shouldn't we have done better on this? And we kind of came to the conclusion of like, well, if this had been a full clean and jerk event, we would have done better. We maybe would have won because we have better technique than these guys. And that was in 2012. And then literally the next year, the event was a full clean and jerk ladder. And we did actually both win. So that was a pretty cool sort of full year, conversation and then outcome, which was pretty fun. So that was, definitely a highlight of my career, both in terms of like getting a first place and being in the soccer stadium with the whole place like screaming for me. But then also like, I guess, a validation of my process as an athlete.
Hell yeah. That's so exciting, man. And what like that is the funnest event to win.
Yes, definitely.
Like there's so much more focus on individuals rather than like everybody doing a bunch of movements and going back and forth. What was going through your mind as you're like getting to your heavier lifts, going through your body and your mind?
Not much. I mean, I'm thinking a little bit about technique, like, oh, you know, that last rep, like I was a little bit whatever, like I felt the bar crash on me, so let's be tighter in the, you know, have the elbows go around the bar better, like maybe something technical like that. I think at a couple points there was a bit of a surprise feeling of like, oh, I'm actually feeling pretty good, like, because you know the warm-up is always nerve-wracking and then you have a 20-minute break before you lift, so your first lift feels like absolute dog crap. And then I'm at the end of this ladder. I'm like, am I PRing? Like, I feel pretty good. I'm not having trouble standing up. Like, don't question it. Don't question it. Just, yeah. So there's, you know, a little bit of that where you're sort of in yourself, and there's a little bit where you're sort of out and you're sort of like, see, like, holy crap, like there's a lot of people in the stand. Like, wow, they're screaming. This is awesome. So it's sort of balancing, like not getting sucked out too far into the crowd, not getting sucked in too much, and sort of trying to ride that wave. And then eventually you fail a lift and it's all over, but it's good while it lasts.
That's rad, man. What's been one of the most challenging moments for you so far?
Well, having different doctors tell me different things about whether or not I had rhabdo a couple times was kind of rough. So this was usually around like the Murph style events or like the Triple Three event, where I think after one of them, I ended up going to the hospital and, you know, get some blood work. And the doctor there was like, oh yeah, you definitely have rhabdo. Like, you should pull out. And then taking those results to the doctor on site who worked for the games, and having that doctor say, well, these numbers are a little more in line with just like extreme fluid loss. So, you know, try and hydrate and you'll probably be okay. So then it's kind of like, well, ball's in my court. Like, I got one doctor saying one thing, one doctor saying another thing. So that's just a crappy spot to be in. That was some time ago. The more recent challenge I've had is, I'm not sure if I should say this on camera, but I competed in China. And it was December of 2019. So I might have brought back coronavirus with me. I'm not sure.
Patient but if I did, zero.
Yeah, I apologize.
It was you.
It was me all along. So
did you get super sick out there?
No.
Okay.
Nope. It was just an ultimate shitstorm of like logistical issues, flight issues, immigration, visa stuff, language barrier, you know, food options, jet lag. All it was every possible challenge you could have imagined for injury as well. Every possible challenge you could have imagined for competition. So basically what happened is you can either like apply for a visa from your embassy and you can get like a 1-year visa or like a 10-year visa or whatever. But for me, the timeline was a little tight, like, because the way the CrossFit season is now, you do these qualifiers and then go to the sanctional, and sometimes they're only like some months apart, right? So you don't have a lot of time to like wait for something in the mail potentially. So no problem. There's something called like a 5-day transit visa. Where as long as you go, there's like a technicality where you go country A, China, country B. And so you're technically in transit through China, so you don't need a visa.
Oh, got it.
So the route I booked was Toronto to Chengdu and then Chengdu to Chicago. Okay. So technically I was going from Canada to China and then from China to a third country. And it just happened to be that Chicago is very close to Toronto. So
that's a crazy turnaround for an event in China.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. But where I effed up big time was that I show up to the airport the night I'm supposed to leave, which is literally like, I don't know, 2 or 3 nights before the competition. And they don't let me on the plane because my route had a stop in Beijing. So my flight route was Toronto, Beijing, Chengdu, like just a, you know, what do you call it? Like a transfer, like you get on a different plane. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no, because you get off your plane in Beijing, that's where your 5-day transit visa is. So you can't leave Beijing for the 5 days. So you can't go to Chengdu because that's not country B. That's another city in China. So I tried to argue and be like, well, I'm not leaving the airport. I'm going to like get off one plane and go on another plane. Like it's part of the route. The end result is Chengdu. They weren't hearing it at all. They kind of scoffed at me. And so that was a big blow to my, to my ego. And also a blow to my bank account. So what I ended up doing was basically paying for 2 trips to China and leaving a day later. So getting in super, like, obviously stressed out, jet lagged. And then having to, navigate, of course, the language barrier, having to try and find foods that I recognized as, you know, appropriate for pre-competition. And then it was a cool competition. I loved it. There was a really neat part where they took us on a field trip to a panda sanctuary. So they tried to make it like a good experience for the competitors, and their family members. Like my dad came with me, which was really great. And then I actually injured my, I don't know, calcaneus or my Achilles insertion, on one of the workouts. So I ended up having to, you know, compete, sort of finish out with an injury. So it was kind of an ultimate, you know, pretty much almost everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But I was able to do it and I survived and I got through it. And I had some pretty good, like, executions on a lot of things in terms of my event preparation and, you know, my mindset and my timing and my post-event recovery and all the, stuff like that that you need to have dialed in as an athlete. So for me, that was kind of a great experience. Like, I'm glad I went through with it. Like, there was a moment, you know, at the airport when they didn't let me on plane where I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm not going. Like, that's too bad. And so to have, I basically had, you know, an option where I could just press delete and none of that would have ever happened pretty easily, or to sort of like persevere and push through and commit to it and come out feeling like, honestly, now, and I think about that, I think about that often, where if I'm in a difficult situation or struggling or think I can't do something or don't want to do something, I just think like, well, I did that thing in China, so it's not so bad.
Damn, that's a wild story, man. You made it. You made it.
I made it. Yeah. At the cost of, you know, global stability, I made it back.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it was, and it ended up being actually a great experience also, like with my father, because what I had to do was I flew from Toronto to get there in time. I had to fly from Toronto to Vancouver, get on the flight that my dad was on, and go from Vancouver to China. So we ended up getting to travel together there, which we wouldn't have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then on the way back, his flight out got canceled, which was pretty nerve-wracking because, again, with the 5-day transit visa, like if your flight gets canceled again and again and again, well, now you're there past 5 days and you might be in trouble in terms of your visa. Mm-hmm. But his flight got canceled, moved just by a day. So we ended up having an extra day together to just go sightseeing and exploring in China. So that was a great experience as well. So it ended up being, being good.
That's great, man. I've read or heard you speak about the MJ documentary somewhere. And for listeners, this is the second most important documentary that you should watch. That was so freaking good. Anyway, you know, one of the biggest things that comes through in that documentary is just how crazy competitive Michael Jordan was. So I'm curious, how competitive would you consider yourself?
Oh boy. It comes and goes. So on the level of MJ, where literally everything is a competition, I'm not like that. As a matter of fact, I almost think the whole reason he put out the documentary was as a competitive move.
Really?
To take the spotlight back from Kobe.
Oh.
So, right? So Kobe passes away. He's everybody's favorite basketball player now all of a sudden, right? Everyone's posting about Kobe and how inspired they were by Kobe. And MJ's like, oh, you forgot about me, huh? Bam, documentary. Now all those people have to go back on their tweets and be like, oh, I watched the MJ documentary. MJ's the best basketball player ever. He's my favorite. Oh, yeah. God. So I think that was just psychological warfare on his part.
Either him or LeBron.
Right.
Either Kobe or LeBron. He's trying to take it back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue against MJ. I was never like a huge basketball head. Like, I don't have all the stats memorized and stuff. I don't think there's space in my brain for that. But I mean, I do remember, like, as a kid watching, you know, Rodman and Pippen and MJ on the crummy little TV and like being pretty wowed by those guys. Mm-hmm. So to get back to your question, there's moments when I'm hyper competitive. Like if I'm playing when we were kids, playing ping pong or billiards with my brother and my dad, it would be just, you know, just men or not men, but boys, you know, just like sweating up a storm, you know, cussing each other out and trying to sink the awesome shots. And now that we're more grown, we play yard games. We play croquet. We play a game called Coob. You ever played Coob?
No.
I think it's a new-ish game. It's basically a mix between like bocce and, I don't know, like tennis maybe. So you have a square, mm-hmm. and everyone has wooden blocks on their end, mm-hmm. and then each team has six like big fat drumsticks, like a wooden dowel.
Okay.
And you stand on your baseline and you whip the dowel at the other side and try and knock over their blocks. And then if you knock over their blocks, you get to put them in their half of the field, like closer to the midline. And then then they have to knock over the blocks that you knocked over, and if they don't, you get to stand at that point on your next turn. So it's kind of like the pieces kind of advance and you have to keep knocking them over. And
okay.
So it's an element of like, you know, throwing for physical skill and a bit of strategy and stuff. It's a lot of fun anyways. So
cool.
So when I was home visiting during the summer, we got into some pretty heated matches there. So yes, I'm definitely competitive, whether it's, you know, outside of CrossFit or just with my family and friends. I play some Call of Duty Warzone. I also play some Fortnite. So I like video games. That's a pretty good competitive outlet.
Nice.
Because it doesn't really physically exhaust you like doing a CrossFit workout does.
Yeah, you can train 3 times a day and then play some Fortnite. You're still, yeah. You're all good. It's recovery exactly. work. You can put your, what do they call those boots? The Normatec or whatever.
Yeah, man. I love the Normatec. I have some Normatecs. I love them. I travel with them. I use them post-flight. And it's a great way to feel like you're still an athlete when you're watching Netflix or playing video games. You're like, oh, no. Do my recovery.
And you can get 15% off by going to normatec.com/Lucas Parker.
Oh, I wish.
Organic ad. Yeah, I just got an Xbox too, man. We were so bored during COVID at one point that actually it was a D that brought it up. She's like, we should go get an Xbox. I've never been more in love with her.
Oh man, that's amazing. Yeah. I'm gonna have to clip that and show it to Lindsay.
Yes. Yeah. Where were we? Oh, competitiveness. So on that same, I think it was an interview. On that same interview, I heard you say something like, "Competitiveness is not always adaptive." Hmm. Right? It can be an advantage, but it's not always adaptive. What might you have meant by that?
Jeez. Oh man, now you're catching me in my own, not knowing what I'm talking about here. I guess you'd have to sort of pick a context in order to ground the topic or the conversation. So, I mean, let's say, cause we both know CrossFit and presumably most of your listeners are maybe, knowing about CrossFit competition. You know, I think there's some athletes who maybe get wrapped up in the leaderboard or start doing the calculations of, oh, if I had just gone, you know, 1 second faster on my 2K row, then I would have been, or my 1K row, then I would have, you know, made the games or whatever. Mm-hmm. If we're going by the past online thing we just watched for the 2020 games. So, I mean, that's a pretty like simple, obvious example of like being too focused on the numbers and where you stand relative to other people and doing better or worse. Is maybe not super helpful, is maybe just getting down on yourself and is maybe missing the bigger picture of like, oh, was it really your 1 second on that 1K or was it, you know, 6 months before where you maybe weren't like, I don't know, getting enough calories in or something. Like there's a lot of like, I don't know, competition narrows the focus, right? So competition is you win or you lose, you come first or you're second. It happened in the moment. It was a split second. And that's the easiest thing to make a narrative out of. And that's what announcers focus on. And we're very like story driven, right? So competition and being competitive is kind of a way of like, I don't know. It's kind of a way of like writing a story and it just might not be an accurate story.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of where my head's at right now.
Yeah. I like that. What comes to mind for me is the difference between training and competing or the distinction between training and competing. As soon as it's a competition, it is easier to forget that it's a learning experience. If you treat things as training or an experiment or as just a way to have fun, then you're much more likely to learn from the experience or at least be open to it. When it's a competition, people, myself included, tend to be much harder on themselves and to be very binary, like you were saying, like, did I win or did I lose? The best, you know, they are learning from every different experience they have. But for most people, it can be harder to learn from a competition than other experiences.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that's something that you can't really fault. Let's go back to MJ. Because he's hyper competitive. For him, everything's a competition, but that doesn't, as far as I know, I don't know his personal life, that doesn't set him back. Like even like when he's over competitive, hyper competitive, when he loses, that just brings him back tenfold, right? So that's, I guess, one way to sort of capitalize on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what you said did sort of jog my memory a bit of like, oh yeah, that was probably what I was saying about competition was the difference between competition versus training. And I think that's something that I mean, it's just my personal bias of like partly maybe to do with my education and partly to do with my, I guess my rugby background, like through high school, like you don't compete every day. You practice during the week and then you maybe play on the weekend and you play every weekend or every other weekend for a set amount of time. And then you don't play for a bit. So you're not always competing. It's not always game day. So it's sort of the difference between like training day versus game day. And I know there's some t-shirts out there that say like compete every day. And that's maybe an okay philosophy, but when it comes to your actual like physical output, going 100%, like striving for, you know, winning at all costs every single day, is in my opinion, not sort of the best way to go about that. And then if, like, I guess a personal sort of experiential anecdote of kind of what you talked about with like, yeah, like winning or losing, and that's kind of all there is to it. So I train at Training Think Tank. And up until recently, of course, I haven't done any travel in 2020. The last couple of years, I would go down to Atlanta a lot. Toronto to Atlanta is a pretty easy flight. I train at Training Think Tank, and I've been able to do, you know, a few weekends down there with like Travis Mayer and Noah Olson. So when I train with those guys, I lose all the time. So if that's all I'm looking at is the competition aspect of it, well, then I suck because I'm always losing and it sucks and everything sucks and I'm going to quit. But, you know, there's, if it's just us three on the leaderboard, I'm always going to be at the bottom. But of course, there's going to be one workout in there where I can beat Travis. There's going to be one workout in there where I can beat Noah. And so taking those, you know, small victories can kind of boost me a bit. But it's more about seeing, okay, these are two of the best guys in the sport. And like, how close can I get? Is that a valuable training experience? Of course it is. Is that a raising of my stimulus outside of my comfort zone? Of course it is. So there's a ton of good value there, looking at it as a training exercise, looking at it as very specific training exercise, which I think is valuable to CrossFit and fitness racers, is the fact that you rarely win events. Matt Fraser accepted, maybe. If you win a weekend, let's say a sanctional or a regional or a games weekend, the winner at the end might not have any first place finishes. That's a common occurrence. Or they don't have all first place finishes, of course. That's almost always guaranteed. So in order to perform highly, you need to be able to look to your left and look to your right and see two guys beating you and not get demoralized. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to do. So to be able to do that, like in the gym, in training, and, you know, see a guy ahead of you and say, oh, well, he's winning, so I'm going to back off. You kind of have to be able to train yourself to have the opposite. Mm-hmm. But if all you think about is, oh, it's a competition, and so he won, so I'm after him, so that's all there is to it, that's going to have a worse, effect on your performance. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the way that CrossFit has adapted to like COVID and all of that stuff this year? Like the online thing, taking five to Aromas. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think they're doing the best they can. I'm not sure who's really behind it. As many people know, probably CrossFit has, I guess, a new CEO, this Eric Rosa guy. Seems cool. I've never met him, but you know, he seems to have some business acumen as well as like a CrossFit pedigree behind him, being an affiliate owner and a longtime workout guy. So that sounds pretty good. But that's a pretty recent change. And up before that, I'm pretty sure it was mostly Dave Castro, sort of at least trying to navigate, you know, the structure of the season and making changes and things like that. And at least knowing a little bit how his mind works, like it's very military minded, right? So it's kind of like he's got an objective and he's going to pursue every avenue to that objective. Plan A doesn't work, go to plan B. Doesn't work, go to plan C. And sort of always with the goal of like still completing the objective in some way. And so that seems to be kind of how things are going, right? Because the games that we may or may not actually, you know, get to watch in the coming weeks are not going to be anything like the games we've had before. But we can, if you're just looking at the objective, it's like you can still give the stamp of approval, like, yes, the CrossFit Games happened in 2020.
And yes, maybe you found the fittest person.
Exactly, yeah. And so maybe there's an asterisk there, maybe not. But it's like, hey, we got to complete the objective. We can't just bail on this. We have to like make it happen, make something happen so that something happens, because that's kind of just like that singular military focus. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of like, well, so it's kind of like, you know, when you're at like the airport and you're waiting in your gate and like, oh, ding, like 15 minute flight delay. Okay, not too bad. Wait around. And then ding, oh, it's another 15 minutes. Okay, that's half an hour. Not too bad. And they say, oh, okay, folks, actually, it's going to be another hour. Just hang tight. And you're like, oh, well, okay, I can hang another hour. And then you get another. And then so before you know it, right, what is supposed to be a 15-minute delay that is totally acceptable, you're fine with that, it's now turned into a two-hour delay. And I guess you're kind of okay with that. And then you look out the window and you see the whole plane is like disassembled on the runway. And you're like, well, hold on, it was never going to be 15 minutes. Like, why the F did you tell me that? And it's, so it's sort of this like easing, this easing in and this like acquiescing, to get people to sort of like stay calm and not lose their shit. And I think that's exactly what happened with, like with COVID. So it was kind of like, well, it's going to be a couple of weeks because like the incubation period is 2 weeks. So let's just sit tight for 2 weeks. Then they'll go away and we'll carry on about our lives. And it's like, well, there's people like outside the country traveling. So they'll need to come home. It'll be another 2 weeks. And it's like, well, okay, things are kind of getting out of hand. So it's like, it's going to be another month, right? And then so it sort of keeps building and building. And what was supposed to be supposedly just a couple weeks thing or a couple months thing is now probably going to be, you know, at least a year, if not more by the end of it. Mm-hmm. If we ever go back to normal, I don't know what that is. And
so I would actually kind of, like you to put your mask on right now.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. Am I breathing on the camera too much here? yeah. And hey, we might find out that particles can be transmitted like through headsets. Like we don't know that, right? Mm-hmm. But so I guess my whole point with that is like the CrossFit season kind of fell into that same pattern, right? It was like, okay, well, we're going to like delay the games by a little bit. And then I was like, okay, we're going to delay it again. Oh, okay, well, we might not be able to have it in person. So let's do an online thing and then do smaller people in person. And we've yet to see whether or not it'll happen. I had a bet with a friend that I bet him a cheeseburger that the games was probably not going to happen. So we're going to have to debate now whether like a 5-person games is the games as promised or if I still win my cheeseburger.
Oh, but, you owe him a cheeseburger.
All right.
For sure.
And it's nothing for me. It's nothing like I don't wish any ill of the games or the competitors. I really feel for the competitors who qualified and then had their spots taken away because they didn't make the cut for the online section. Mm-hmm, right. Like that was brutal, but like, I don't know. I feel like if they really wanted the games to happen, they would just go to one of these like live free and die states, like, you know, like Florida, Georgia, Texas, just, like,
baby.
Yeah. Just get a, you know, get a stadium, have the games there. Like, people can travel if they want to take the risk. I think that would be the way to actually make it happen the way they want it to happen. I'm not sure why they're trying to have it in California, especially like with the air quality now. I think like everything's on fire and call me crazy, but I think the air quality had an effect on some of the competitors in the online portion. Thanks. So it's like, it's all these crazy factors that no one could have seen coming and they're trying to make the best of the situation. And I wish them the best, but if this is the way the sport is going to be in the future, which is just like all online, just like, do a workout at your home gym. Like, man, I don't know if that's what I signed up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your predictions on the podium?
Man, I hate to say, but I mean, probably Fraser, probably take it again. And I'd love to see Tia continue to build her legacy. I don't think we've seen, of course we haven't seen a female legacy like hers at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see her just like, go as far and as hard as she can to just sort of like set the precedent for the next, you know, female champion that comes behind her. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then man, in terms of filling in, like, I think it's really going to depend on the events. A lot of people complained about how the online portion of the games was not, I don't know what, CrossFit Gamesy, or the programming was biased, or it wasn't, some people complained about the time domains, I think. So it might be the case that Castro was just getting all the like CrossFit, vanilla CrossFit gym stuff out of the way first. And now everything at the ranch is going to be long, hard, grinding, rucking, you know, weird stuff. And we might not see a 21:59 with, you know, a pull-up bar or whatever, because we already did a bunch of that.
So question, do the scores start at zero in Aromas?
I don't know. Okay. I'm not sure if that's been announced.
Okay.
I think Matt Fraser will be pretty pissed off if they do that.
Yeah.
Because he's got a substantial lead.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an argument for either way, but that info might be out there, but I don't know. So I can't really say.
Why do you think Fraser, and maybe this is presumptive, but from my perspective, Fraser and Tia are so dominant. It's absolutely in terms of consistency in competition, but also in most events in terms of point spread, with the exception of Fraser and Olsen last year. Is it like the rich get richer, where the most successful people are able to tap into a different level of confidence because they've earned it? Like, they've been the best for so long that they just continue to pull away. What are your thoughts on how they've been so dominant?
I think there's a bit of that. I like, yeah, the rich get richer. I mean, that makes me think of Rich Froning. That would have been a good t-shirt yeah. slogan for him. But, or the other saying that I really latched onto back in high school, again, like rugby stuff, was winners make their own luck. So you look at some of these athletes, less so in CrossFit, but still a bit, but especially a lot in, again, like basketball is a great example. You're like, oh man, how lucky was he? Like that went in. Like you see like the craziest layup where he's like under the backboard and like somehow does it like around the side or whatever. You're like, oh, he's so lucky. But like, I mean, winners make their own luck. They make their own luck by taking chances. They make their own luck by practicing. They make their own luck by, you know, honing their skills when you're not watching, things like that. So there's a bit of that. I mean, I think momentum is a real thing, right? Like just having confidence from past performances. And I don't know their program and how they train, but I think they have a pretty good coach in Tia's husband. And I imagine anytime a workout comes up, they have pretty ready at hand or in the back of their mind, like, oh, I've pretty much done that already. Because they've probably accumulated, in all the volume they've accumulated, there's probably been a workout that's very similar to whatever Dave Castor can write up. So I think that's kind of part of the reason like a high volume approach is effective. And I think they both train at a pretty high volume.
And how is that different than some of the other top competitors?
Well, it's hard to say. I'm going to come back to the idea of luck here. Like we've heard a couple times that Fraser, like for example, the Rogue Invitational, he didn't compete because I think he tweaked his back. But as far as we know, he's never really had a debilitating injury. Right. Like versus you look at someone like Sam Briggs, who's had like two dozen like reconstructive surgeries, like through her whole body. She's basically a bionic woman by now. So she's kind of on the other end of that spectrum of like, wow, she's had a lot of serious issues where she's needed to take time off, maybe have a surgery or do some rehab or whatever. And it has somehow against what many people would, you know, say as a reasonable chance has come back to perform at a top level. And that's insanely inspiring and amazing. And I can't ever imagine being able to come back and come back and come back and come back. Mm-hmm. But imagine how even higher level of performance she could have reached if she'd had none of those injuries and been able to train at her crazy high level for more, for a higher average accumulation over time.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the case with Fraser and Tia, as far as I know. They've never really had in their CrossFit career anyways, like apparently Fraser like broke his back weightlifting, right? But since then, as far as we know, in their CrossFit sport career, they've never really had to take a year off for injury or surgery or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a huge part of it is kind of, I guess, they're obviously very smart in the way they train. Maybe a bit of luck as well. There were a few moments, man, like in the games, was it 1 year or 2 years ago, where Fraser fell off that cargo net. I mean, maybe he breaks his wrist and he's out. Like that's one split second that changes everything. And there was, what was the one where they had the road bike race? That was last year, right?
Yeah. I forget what they called it.
Yeah. So there was literally, I was watching at home and I saw this shot of a corner and they came around the corner and Fraser had, you know, a near miss with someone and he had a bobble, right? And you see you get like a speed wobble or like you got bumped and the handlebars go, whoa, 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 whoa. And there's another split second where he kind of maybe got lucky. He could have gone over the handlebars, broken all his teeth out, right? So there's like within the span of like that one CrossFit Games, there were a few moments where he almost lost it all, but no one really either noticed or commented on it, or of course it wasn't relevant at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But so I think, you know, luck is a part of it and winners make their own luck.
Yeah. I think those moments happen to everyone. And for most people, they can't like with the wobble thing, he seems to be so in control of his body and his mind that he's able to field those like mm-hmm. others don't seem as consistently able to do. And then, yeah, I love what you're talking about luck. So Naval Ravikant, are you familiar with this guy?
The name rings a bell, but
he's
go
like
ahead.
A prolific investor. He started angel.io, which is like all for angel investing. And he talks about there being four different kinds of luck. The first being like pure luck, chance. And then one of them being something to the effect, like in relation to what you're saying, like when you put in enough hours of training and practice and you move out to Cookeville to train with the current best of all time. And then you get the best female of all time to train with you. And you travel less than a lot of your competitors, and you know, you live a simpler life than a lot of your competitors, all for this one goal, you do really start to make your own luck. Like, things start to go in your favor.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm going to have to look that up. I like the idea of four different types of luck. That kind of reminds me of, you know, the ancient Greek thing of like, there's seven different types of love or whatever. So it's cool to have, you know, have a word that you think might mean something, like you just say luck or love, but it actually has maybe some different definitions. And then of course, I mean, I don't know if it's unsaid or if we're outside of our scope of practice here, but like, who knows what like the drug situation is, right? Like that's something, that's a card that everyone will play when you ask like, oh, where's the dominance come from? How are they so good? And then it's pretty easy to just say, well, drugs, but I don't know, man. I mean, like, I'm someone who has been literally accused to my face of like, well, you're obviously on steroids. And all I can say is like, I can tell you I'm not, and you can believe me or not, but I'm not on steroids. I've just looked like this since I was like 12 years old. That's just how I was, how I was built.
Man, high school must have been pretty great for you.
No, I got, well, yeah, high school is all right. When I was in grade school, I got made fun of because I had really long eyelashes and I looked like a girl. But now it's one of my most attractive traits. So
amazing.
There you go.
Amazing.
Yeah. But, and then, you know, there's the whole debate of like, well, even if you're on drugs, like you still need to work hard, and they work harder than everyone else. And, but, yeah, I mean, I can tell you that. So going back to the 2013 Clean and Jerk Ladder, right? Like, I was able to get a first place in an event that you would think would really benefit from steroids, right? Like Olympic or like strongman or Olympic lifters or powerlifters are typically who you think about when you think about performance enhancing drugs from like a muscle standpoint. And I got a first place not on drugs, and I have it on, I don't know, this is dumb talking rumors and stuff without saying names, but supposedly I have it on pretty good authority that someone else in that event was on steroids. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even come close to the top. So I don't know if that's like too much of like a small example that just goes in my favor of saying like, well, I was not on drugs and I beat a guy in a lifting event who was on drugs. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's the example that my mind goes to whenever I think about, oh, well, the winners must be on drugs. It's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. Word, man. Yeah. Regardless, it's exciting to watch.
Yeah. And I hope we get to watch this year. Cause I, of course, am a fan of the sport. So I hope they bring, you know, some good media people in and, give us something to cheer for from our couches.
Hell yeah, dude. Okay. So as we wrap up, what are you most excited about in life right now? And what should listeners, know and, all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, career wise, I'm doing some coaching, which I'm really enjoying. I'm doing some, remote coaching, I call it, which is like one-on-one programming or, you know, working with people on their, you know, making daily adjustments and doing check-in calls and things like that. And that's something that has helped me feel, I guess, still connected to the CrossFit community during this weird time. Because normally what I do is I travel all over and I coach workshops in Europe and the States and Australia and South America. And that's kind of off the table for me. So I had to transition, do a little remote coaching. That's been a lot of fun. And I'm putting together. So if you're an OG fan of me, you'll remember that about 6 years ago, I put out something called the Squat Strong Program, which was at the time, which was an ebook. It was a 6-week squat program. So myself and the writer and publisher of that with me, Cam Burtwell, who's one of my mentors, we are rehashing it and we're putting it in like an online platform. So we spent most of August making some video content where we explain the program and there's video demonstrations and things like that. And so that's something that's in the works to be a bit more of a multimedia thing. And that'll be kind of my first, like, kind of, I guess, big launch other than an ebook. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Other than that, what I'm excited about is just trying to do cool shit, do fun training stuff. I try and post that online, right? Like, I've been playing around on my slack line without a barbell, taking the, you know, going paddleboarding. I've been doing a lot of skateboarding lately, which has been a lot of fun. I don't think I'll ever go like full speed with like the hand pads and like do skids down a highway or anything like that. But I've been trying to have some fun, like outside, get myself in nature on human powered things, right? Like skateboards, paddleboards, mountain bikes, things like that. And I try and capture some of that on my social media. And then, I also want to give a big shout out to our buddies, my buddies, Matt Chan and Margo Alvarez, who crushed it on the Titan Games. It's really cool to see CrossFitters doing like I don't know what you call it, like a real like TV competition and just like destroying on there. I think it's a great validation of like what we do as a training methodology, the type of athletes that we're sculpted into mentally and physically. And I'll put this out there right now. I'm going to try and go on the Titan Games. I don't have to take Canadians, but if they do a third season, I hope you'll see me on that show.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, man.
Man, what I heard or what I thought of when you said multimedia is DVDs. Remember DVDs, man? Rest in peace.
Yeah.
They were short-lived. Dude, this was great. Such a wide-ranging, awesome conversation. Thanks for being who you are, Lucas.
Yeah. Oh, well, same to you, Michael. Yeah, it's really good to reconnect after all these years. Glad we were able to have a good back and forth. And yeah, I really appreciate some of the things you said. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, man. Take it easy.